Jesus put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in the field, but while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in the field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slave said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No. For in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. Then at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them into bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" The word of the Lord. With all the summer rain and a full schedule, it has been a while since I have been on my riding mower. On Friday afternoon, I took my turn to mow the yard. The dew had burned off, the grass was dry. I fired up the Briggs & Stratton, lowered the blade, and took it for a spin. It took about 45 minutes, and it was done. Yet as I circled the front yard for the first time, I realized my lawn is full of weeds. Now, I knew there were a few. There had been kind of a search and destroy weed and feed expedition sometime in the late spring, hoping to eliminate most of the dandelions. But it seems since then, other undesirables have invaded our little plot of land. Now, that's a big deal in the suburbs. Everybody wants and expects a perfect yard. A perfect yard at least gives the impression of a perfect home. Some neighbors spend an awful lot of money to have professional chemists spray their soil. Most of these consumers want to guarantee that that will now remain weed-free. That's what they're paying for, after all. And you know as well as I, if there is a guarantee, it is not worth the paper it is written on. One man I know tried a number of lawn services to no avail. Being a rather tightly controlled sort, the weeds greatly upset him. So one year, in his scorched earth attempt, he killed off all the vegetation in his yard, wiped it all out, grass included. Then he trucked in a lot of topsoil, spread it around, started with some starter fertilizer, and with the best Scotts Premium Fescue he could find, he reseeded the entire yard. Guess what? The grass came up. It was beautiful. And the weeds came back. And they had to send him to a padded room for a short vacation. Where do the weeds come from? It's the recurring issue in lawn care and life. If Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a gardener who throws around an awful lot of seeds, the very next episode then is about the reality of weeds. There are weeds in every field. There are weeds in every family. Even if the kids are raised with security, safety, good nutrition, good guidance, and that grandparents are healthy, somebody will get sick. Somebody else will go off the rails, and somewhere you know there is always a crazy uncle. It would be nice to think every family is perfect, but we know better. There are weeds. There are weeds in every business. The enterprise is created, the product identified, the factory built, the workers trained, and then the machine breaks down. Or one of the workers sneaks out a product under his shirt, or somebody in the financial department is caught cooking the books. Weeds. There are weeds in every church. We don't want to believe that, but it is true. Good people respond to the casting about of the seed of the gospel. They congregate, they sing, they serve, they worship. They declare their love for Jesus and for one another. And then suddenly, a bit of gossip invades like a pestilence. Or a weak soul is tempted by all the surrounding goodness. Or something sinister happens in the dark shadows of the choir room. Weeds. It's difficult to deal with the reality of weeds. When a young adult went looking for his first house, he found a possible home in a nearby village. He took a tour and came back laughing. "I crossed it off the list immediately," Josh said. The owner had paved over the front yard. Now that's one response to the weeds, I suppose. Or somebody told me about a middle-aged minister of a church. They said he was seasoned. I think what that meant was he was worn out. He said, "I'm going to start a new church. There's going to be a steeple and a sanctuary and a pew large enough for one person, me. That's the kind of church I want, just me and God, and certainly nobody else. No weeds in the garden." In the parable that we've heard, the servants come to the owner of the house and say, "Should we pull up all those weeds?" It's a reasonable question. The landowner is the sower who has cast about the good seed rather indiscriminately. It was pure and perfect as he threw it about, but then something happened. Some kind of corruption crept in. Now it's easy, all too easy, to ascribe that corruption to an enemy, to some unseen villain who sneaks around late at night and taints a perfect crop and is never available during the day. I know, that's kind of ridiculous in real life. My next door neighbor doesn't do that. Now she throws my broken tree branches back into my yard. But I don't believe for a minute that she would ever sneak over to blow dandelion seeds. Well, she might, but I don't perceive her as an enemy. So I wonder if the landowner is overstating the case. This is a parable, after all, and there are some weak-hearted Christians who do believe that the devil is every bit as powerful as God. I hold that that's nonsense. God made the world. God made the squirrels, the pine cones, the sea turtles, the silver mountains, and then God called all of it good. There is no devil with that kind of power. And the devil is a liar, which means he is never as important as he says he is. But there is still corruption. God's good creation is mysteriously tainted. The psalmist knows that. We recited Psalm 12 today. The liturgist asked before the service, "Do you really want to have all of them read that?" But remember the final verse? "On every side the wicked prowl as vileness is exalted among humankind." Now maybe you came to church to forget about that, but church is about reality. And the reality is there are some weeds in the wheat. The parable says, when the weed bears its grain, when it is most fruitful, that's when the weeds become obvious. And the recurring question, what do we do about that? If there is good and there is evil, some say, let's pluck out the evil, pull out the weeds. That's an understandable response. Every once in a while, we hear about someone who wants to purify the world, or at least their corner of it. They want to go in there, separate the weeds from the wheat, the tainted from the pure, the good from the evil, the goats from the sheep, the left from the right. They're on a crusade to restore things to the way that they were intended to be. And you might even hear them say, "I'm going to drain the swamp." Well, how's that working out? Doesn't work so well. if the swamp is somehow inside of you too. It is impossible to clean up the world if your own hands are dirty. And you know why? Because the enticements of corruption are always greater than the purity of those who think they are good. But nevertheless, every once in a while, someone will try to go pull up some weeds. Every so often in my pastoral work, I will come across some dear soul who wishes to divide the world into two categories, Christian and everybody else. And they are absolutely convinced that they know what Christian means. They have a checklist, perhaps of observable behaviors. Don't drink, don't dance, don't chew, or date the girls that do. Why do we have to reduce the Christian faith to observable behaviors? Shouldn't we also make decisions based on mercy, forgiveness, love, justice, a second chance? But the dear soul may persist and say, we shouldn't put that person in the committee or group because he's not Christian or she's not Christian enough. You know what that is? It's a desire to keep the field pure, to present the church to Christ spotless and without blemish. It sounds so right, but it can go so wrong. Because for one thing, all of us are a work in progress, and it is not harvest time yet. And for another thing, who wishes to say that they alone are the arbiter of what is Christian and what is not? Who gets to decide who belongs to God and who does not? Who has enough purity to weed the garden? According to the New Testament, it is Jesus Christ alone who will present the church spotless and without blemish. And you know how he can do it? Because he has forgiven every sin. So it is Jesus who says in the parable, leave the weeds alone. Don't touch them. Don't uproot the good wheat by presuming you can identify and extract a weed. Now, one of the intriguing details of this parable is that the weeds are actually given a proper name. In Greek, they are called zizania. What's zizania? Well, the botanists now would call it darnel. It is a plant that looks exactly like the wheat and grows exactly alongside the wheat so closely that you cannot tell the difference. You cannot distinguish. You cannot differentiate. So one of the points of the parable is simply what Jesus has said before in this gospel. Do not judge lest you be judged. Our own vision is not always clear. Our own clarity is more obscured than we realize. And maybe, at least for the time being, there are a few weeds in our own garden, and God still has some work to do in us. So, this parable is how I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Jesus is a Calvinist. For all of his righteousness and clarity, John Calvin would never finally conclude that he was righteous and clear. He would say that everybody, no matter how pure they believe themselves to be, is tainted and bears the seed of corruption. Even our best efforts are tainted by self-interest and sometimes twisted out of shape by evil. So if you think that your call is to pull up the weeds, you could end up destroying the wheat, the good crop, which is precisely why we need a Savior who sees clearly and ultimately is responsible for the final sorting. The day will come, says Christ, when the fisherman's net has caught all kinds of fish and the good and the bad will be separated. The day will come, he says, when the sheep will be separated from the goats, all on the basis of whether or not they learned to show compassion and care. So Jesus says, leave them alone. When it's harvest time, better hands than yours will handle it. Is he really saying, leave it alone? Well, yes. But Jesus never says that we should acquiesce to the evils that we deplore. Because faithful Christian discipleship always works for good. It works for God's good. It works for the public good. And we must never be naive and declare everything is beautiful. Neither should we give in to the evil and cynically say, there's nothing we can do. Reminds me of an interview, New York Times, 10 years ago. Columnist David Brooks was talking to a young Chicago politician named Barack Obama. They were getting acquainted. They didn't know one another. And Brooks said the conversation went on for a while. They had so much in common, even though they would cancel out one another's vote. In the course of things, Obama led on that he read a lot of books, and Mr. Brooks suddenly asked out of the blue, so have you ever read the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr? Obama sat up straight and said, yes, I love him. He is one of my favorite philosophers. And Brooks said, well, what do you take away from him? And with a rush of words, Obama said, I take away the compelling idea that there is serious evil in the world with hardship and pain. And I also take away that we should be humble and modest in our belief that we can ever eliminate such things. But I also take that we should never use that for an excuse to do nothing. Because I know the efforts are going to be hard, but we have to work for good. So I was thinking about all this while I was mowing my heavily weed-filled lawn on Friday. It gave me a lot to think about. It was a hot day, so when I finished, I saw Jesus standing there and I said, how about if we have a cool cup of water together? We sat together in the front porch and had a little chat. He looked at the front yard and said, looks pretty good. Your wife will be proud of you. Thanks, Lord. It's a job that needed to get done. I sat for a minute. I took a sip of that delicious cup of water that he created. And then I got up the courage to ask, so what about the weeds? There's so many weeds. If I had the energy or even the inclination, I could never get rid of the weeds. He smiled and said, leave them alone. I started to say, but the weeds, and he interrupted me to say, it's my